Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rutolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. I am just so excited about the show. And I'm just going to give you a little history about this. About 5 years ago, my younger son, who's 25, he's ADHD and also very low on the spectrum with nonverbal learning disability and was struggling a lot with social interaction, cues, just being able to feel comfortable speaking to people he didn't know, was always very fearful of making mistakes. And so I started 5 years ago to tell him, you know, I think it might be a good idea for you to go to improv. And he told my older son over his dead body, was that ever going to happen? Well, guess what? He's in improv. And I actually got the teacher, Julie Martin, to come on the program today. And let me just tell you a little bit about Julie. She is a confidence and presentation coach. She inspires and educates. Much of her relaxed and upbeat style can be traced to her 12 years as a director, teacher, and performer of improvisational comedy acting. Julie has been defined as a master group facilitator, an inspirational mentor, and a seasoned and understanding coach. And my son loves her, loves the classes, and we had the opportunity Friday night to go see Julie and her cast at Jumpstart Comedy Improv Show in Hermosa Beach, and it was amazing. So without further ado, let's bring Julie on the show. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
How are
I'm
you?
I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. This is such a great show. So, you know, I was wondering if maybe you could just talk about yourself a little bit and tell everybody how you got started in improv.
Well, I originally, way back when, it was all about I love speaking, and I wanted to be as comfortable as possible on stage.
Okay.
So we're talking 12 years ago or 15 years ago, this was my thing, you know. And I didn't realize at that time, you know, sometimes you start something and all the added benefits that come with it, you know, right?
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
So you have this idea as your younger self, you know, what you want, and then the journey takes you and gives you so much more richness, right? And
yes.
So I was a person who was up in my head all the time. My father is ADHD. I have ADD something in my life.
Okay.
So definitely there. Yeah, it hasn't been diagnosed, definitely there. And so my brain, I was up in my head all the time because, after all, our school system teaches us, right, that linear thinking and being up in your head is so important. And it's taken me on a journey to understand present time living that has enriched my life in so many ways.
Yeah.
Because you have to be in present time when you're up on stage,
yep,
as you saw Friday night.
Yep.
There's no other place to be, right?
Yes, absolutely. It was an incredible show. I'd never been to improv before, so I was really impressed with what I saw.
Great. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome.
We have a great time. Up on stage, co-creating together in a focused way, because what you learn is to have a certain type of conversation, and you use those conversational skills to build scenes. So it has sort of a focused conversational technique to it. Yes.
So when you talk about having a certain type of conversation, can you explain that a little bit to people who don't know about improv?
Well, one of the biggest parts of the conversation is the concept of yes and. And Tina Fey is really big into this. You know, she's a big improvisational artist. That was she came out of improv into her success today. And the yes
wow.
and concept is such an important part of life. Because yes means I accept what you said, and means let me add to it. And if we all just did that, right, with our family members and everyone, right, it would just be fantastic.
Right.
So the yes and is, you know, it's sort of like if two people were writing together, one person would write a sentence, and then you accept that, yes, that's what we're writing, and then you write the next sentence, and you just take turns, you see. And
right,
so
which
with
is
that,
what...
the, yeah.
No, I was just saying that's kind of what I saw Friday night is
right.
Somebody said something, somebody else said something. It was time. It was excellent.
Thank you. Yeah, we really so you're just doing training to understand that this is the way you will talk. And it's not talking. It's your standing there in present time, and it's even more than that. It's embracing that present moment, and in that is so much creative juice, you know, and it just is a riot. It's so much fun once you get structure of it, you know, so.
Yeah. So I wanted to take a minute, if you don't mind. I'm not going to say the name, but one of the people that are in your group, this is what was written about them. I thought the audience that is listening would enjoy this. So this particular person in school was a kid in the back of the class who couldn't keep quiet. He developed a friendship with the vice principal after numerous disciplinary meetings. Knowing his penchant for mischief, his wife suggested he take an improv class to stay busy. I mean, that is ADHD defined.
Isn't it?
It's amazing. You know, and taking those skills that he's learning in improv and then being able to step outside. I always talk about a comfort zone with my clients, whether they're on the autistic spectrum or ADHD. It can be very difficult sometimes to push out that comfort zone or step outside of it. So
okay.
Maybe you can talk a little bit to everybody who's listening about how improv enables people to be able to do that.
Well, my philosophy, the way I teach it, will help explain that. I like to create what I call the safe zone in my classes, which
okay.
means we are going to accept each other's learning and stumbling and falling down and... Because you see, innovation is dependent on safety,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So we start with the safety, and then what we do is, you get involved in, you know, having an interaction with another person. It's fun. And before you know it, right, you're outside of your normal self. You sort of left that person who was on the computer all day and walking around normally in society. You kind of leave that behind, and you're in this sort of sacred space in the class where you're really accepted, and it's a safe haven for you to utter what comes to your mind, which is not condoned in society, right? You're not supposed to, please sit. It isn't, you know, kids very young get this idea. Sit with your hands folded. Don't embarrass yourself or anyone, right? We want you to go to the embarrassment place, you say, because that's comedy.
Right. You know, and the other thing that I noticed, too,
yeah.
is that what it does is people, there's a lot of people in our world that are perfectionists, so it's very difficult for them to maybe get up on stage and just kind of step outside themselves. Mike happens to be a perfectionist, and I think he's beginning to learn that concept of you can just come up there and make a mistake. It doesn't matter. And you said something to him on Friday night that I wish you would repeat because it's about neuroplasticity, which I thought was very powerful.
Was that on stage when I said it to him?
No, actually, it was before we came in and you talked about him, you know, hitting the mark and then not hitting, you know, getting a laugh, not getting a laugh, and how important that is.
Yeah, I tell all my people that because that's been my own process. And I see my own process and what I see in my students over time. You know, this is part of the brain. You know, here's the real message. You can train your brain to focus. I don't care where you're starting from. I don't care
right.
where you are starting from. You can train the brain. And this specific training is to train the brain to focus on a certain type of conversation back and forth where you're co-creating and doing the yes and. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's just because that's the brain, right? You're training it.
Right.
Sometimes it goes,
right.
I can do this. And sometimes the brain goes, I haven't got anything for you, sorry. And you're standing there going, I haven't got anything, man. What am I going to do? You know, and I train people at that moment, go into your body. How do you feel? Maybe you want to scream because you don't. Yeah, and that's funny too.
Right.
Right. So
see, that's excellent.
Right. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, I know you talk about living in the moment. I constantly live in the moment. I am a big meditation mindfulness person, created neuroplasticity through 8 years of living this way, and I continue every day because I'm experiencing my world in a completely different way than ever before, and that's what created this neuroplasticity. So you talk about living in the moment and focus. How does improv, can you explain a little bit more about how improv helps with focus?
Yeah, sure. So you start out, and you walk into a class, and people go back and forth and converse the way they do in real life, and they soon find out that's what their habit is, or their neuroplasticity. But it won't create the end result they're looking for, which is this sort of heightened, you know, co-creation and all that. So they become
right.
motivated, and I think the motivation is an important aspect to the focus. They become
yes.
motivated for an end result, right? Just like you've had this great result from your mindfulness, they become,
right?
They want this end result of this sort of heightened, really fun kind of in-the-zone place that they want to go to. Because they hit it a few times, and they go, oh, wow, this is great. So the focus, and I think you're asking about a little bit more how the focus is trained. It's just a muscle, and you learn to listen at such a deep level. You learn to listen and really just hone in on the moment in a way that you realize power. And it's sort of like once you feel that present moment that, and it has
right.
that sort of power, you want more. So I guess I'm talking a little bit about motivation. Sort of it starts, you start to see and feel results, and therefore you're more motivated to let go of your own thoughts, okay, and be in the space where everything is created, a zone, if you will.
Wow. So a creative zone.
It is a zone, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Justine, it's really, I mean, when you get to the point where you've really trained your brain, I mean, I sometimes go into a place, a zone where everything else is not in the room. I'm just listening and being the artist in that character, in that scene. It just like all goes away. But it takes a
wow.
while to get to that point. Yeah.
Right. So motivation, okay, it's something that I work with kids and adolescents and adults with ADHD. It's also called initiation. That's the executive function. It's called initiation. And a deficit
right.
of ours is we lack initiation, which to me, the flip side of that is motivation. I mean, it's the same thing. So you're saying that something like this helps to motivate the person to...
I feel it does. I feel there's moments that happen. I mean, you're up there and you don't even understand. You're a beginner. And suddenly you're
right.
saying something that just comes out of your mouth. You don't know where it comes from, but you were in present time and you just said it. And, oh, my gosh, everybody's laughing in the class. And you think, this is the bomb. It's great, you know. It's fun. And
right.
then you say to yourself, how did I do that? And then we break it down so you understand that it was your ability to let go and really just focus in the moment that allowed you
wow.
to do it, yeah.
So you would say that the most successful people in improv that you know of, Tina Fey being one, have learned how to live in the moment when it comes to
absolutely.
To doing their craft.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Stephen Colbert is a really good example. That man,
wow.
I mean, I've never, the whole time he has been on his talk shows and performs, all of the leading people who do comedy are, if you watch them, they are so focused and in the moment.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And they just, other things are not happening. They're right in their craft. And it's a skill that is transferable. I don't care if you're a writer or a comedian, you know, a musician. It really feeds your ability to be in the creative space.
Wow.
Because it's so
That's
immediate.
So big.
Right?
Yeah,
and
it's so big.
It's so immediate. It's like right here it's happening. Here we are having a conversation. I don't have to think, oh, I'm supposed to get in the creative space. Because if you sit and try to, you know, you're in your living room or you're at your desk and go, okay, I'm going to write. I know I'm going to do it. You know, it's like, where is that space? But if you're interacting with someone, it just sort of, a lot of times it just comes to you. It happens. And you go,
right.
oh, I get it.
Wow. So they can use this space that they get into, people that get into improv. See, this is the point of the show, because I wanted people with ADHD, and I had a lot of people on Facebook very excited about this, because
okay.
I think a lot of people are beginning to see the positive of this with people on the spectrum and ADHD. So they can start off with improv, and what you're saying, which I think is so powerful, is when they grab that creative space that they're in the moment, not only are they able to do the improv and the comedy, but they're also able to do other creative things.
So it's a skill that is absolutely transferable.
Wow.
It is. This is the best communication training on the planet. Because,
wow.
and if you look at Stephen Colbert, and, you know, all the nighttime talk show people, they've all come out of improv. Because,
really?
And they're great. Oh, yeah. They're great communicators, right?
Yes.
And communication is a skill. The people who are good communicators get the best jobs.
Yes.
They have the best
yes.
careers. They just do.
Yes.
And some of you who are introverts, that means in front of the computer writing your blog. Right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be you're out in front of people like, oh, my God, that's just, you know, terrifying. But maybe you're a little bit quieter person and you need, you know, the writing or something, you know, composing or whatever.
Right, which is my composes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So that this is very interesting because one of the things I've always said to Mike, because he graduated from Academy of Art University with a degree in multimedia sound design and music production. So it was a year ago, May 22nd, that he graduated, and he has not been able to find a job. Now, this is a very difficult place to break into, because there's a lot of people out there. But my husband spent years in the music industry and has said to him, you know, one of the things you're going to have to learn how to do is step outside yourself and glad hand people without thinking about it. It's just going up to them and saying, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. You know, my name's Mike, whatever. This is when you grabbed him up on stage Friday night and, you know, I could see him. He was in the zone. That's the kind of thing, and I'm saying this for other people that are listening. When you have a highly creative child that you're trying to help them navigate that world, and you're seeing them shutting down composing, shutting down writing, shutting down talking to other people, I've always believed for years that improv was the way out of that place. I always have. And what you're saying is just validating what I believed.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Yeah. You know, we need to have, especially young adults who are navigating the waters, they need beginning successful experiences.
Yep.
Because really the way we manifest in this world is by believing in ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And improv is an excellent way to work through, I hate to say this, but you know, you get out there, you get on stage. I mean, when I first started on stage, I was so insecure. I mean, oh my God.
I can't see that, but yeah.
No, but I threw myself out there in typical ADD fashion, and there I was. And what a journey to, you know, feeling the feelings of that are deep inside you, of your own unworthiness and your own, must be horrible, because that's how you feel when you first start. Oh, I must be horrible. I'm on stage. I must be horrible. But you work through it if you confront it, you see. If you just sit on the couch, you're going to continue feeling that.
Right. Yes.
You see?
Thank you. Yes.
Got to get out of the safe zone into the arena in a way that doesn't take you out. In other words, you got to tiptoe into the arena and kind of try it out, and then maybe tiptoe back and see, well, let's see, what was that? Okay. And now I'll tiptoe out again, you know, and back. And improv allows you to do a little bit of that.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so I guess, let me ask you this. For people who are listening and they have children, adolescents, I don't know what kind of classes. I think they have classes for children with improv as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
They do.
So let's just say people that are listening that have children and adolescents and even, you know, young adults and adults. You mentioned something to me on the phone when we were talking this week about the show. You said, avoid going to places where it's going to be very competitive, like Hollywood.
Well, Hollywood has a subtext that is highly competitive. And for those of us who have, you know, navigated the waters of not being rewarded for our creativity and the way we deserved because of the linear school system, right? Isn't that the ADD thing, right? You're not rewarded for your greatness, really.
No.
Then it's a little harder to navigate those highly competitive waters. There are plenty of teachers all over who, like my class is more of a community class. It's not for competition. It's for the experience.
That's what we want. Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of Hollywood, studios, and they're actors and they're young adults, a lot of young adults, actors who are just highly competitive. And that's, you know, that's just where they're at. Nothing wrong with it. It's just.
No.
Yeah.
But it's not good for, like, you just made a statement about school. Okay. Growing up in school for me was very difficult because I was boring to me, you know, being creative. Back in the Stone Age, nobody knew about ADHD. So I was kind of lost. But today, you know, you have kids that when I see them, they really are in the same place. They don't like school. They don't like the competition, feeling different, okay, because we feel at times very different because we think differently. We're out-of-the-box thinkers. We're not linear and progressive kind of people. So what putting them in an improv class where there's highly competitive people in there would not be a good idea starting out. I mean, if they
They might get where they would eventually feel comfortable there because it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. But I wouldn't start there, no.
No. So you would suggest, because I'm sure improv is all over the country, that people find, you know, your entry-level improv and let them go and sit and watch it first instead of feeling the need to get up and right away engage if they're uncomfortable.
I think that's a great idea.
Right, which is what happened this past week. Right.
Right. Just observe and enjoy and see what it is. And, you know, there's also, you know, you can scale down the situation to two or three people for people who start, you know, and that can be a great way to, you know, just have a little mini coaching session. And that can be a great way to get started for people. So,
yes. Have you experienced in your coaching and your improv class, and have you experienced people that have had a lot of success? And let me just explain to you the kind of person I'm talking about. So there's people that socially, they have a hard time reading social cues, really getting to a place of fitting in a conversation. People are talking, they don't know how to walk up and involve themselves in that conversation. Have you had success with these types of people?
Some, yes. It depends on how brave they end up being, you know.
Okay.
You know, it really is. The thing I have to say about improv, because I've had people who I didn't think they're just the way you describe, and they come out, and it's like amazing. You know,
right.
I've had people who I thought might be successful who run away. It's
really
So it, you know, it confronts your ability. You really have to be able to be your own self-advocate and realize sometimes you fail. I mean, I had a show about 2 or 3 months ago where, you know, I had a couple of bad games. It's like, what happened? You know, my biorhythms just weren't there. I've been doing this 12 years. It's like,
wow.
It happens, you know? And so you have to, even in that instance, I had to relearn to support myself, right?
Wow.
So it's about being your own advocate. Look, the thing about ADD, ADHD is you're a unique and special kind of person, and you need to take ownership of that. And realize you're not like everybody else, but a lot of the people who are quirky are the ones in today's world that are successful, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, in school maybe it doesn't work out so well, but, you know, it eventually, if you stay with yourself and find your place where you shine, you will... allow your genius to come out. Because there is...
Exactly.
I feel genius in the ADHD brain.
Oh, amazing. We really are. I mean, so many of us just are incredible when it comes to being at that level. And that's something that frustrates me personally because... You know, in the 23 years I've been coaching, I've met a lot of different people who will whisper, yes, child has ADHD? Because they don't want the child to know about it, or because they're afraid that people are going to think their child is stupid. You know, I did a book a couple of years ago. I just put together a book all about all the different people in the world that have ADHD, and Mike designed the front cover, and it's the Hollywood sign overlaid with ADD Land, the gift of ADD. Because there wouldn't be a Hollywood if it wasn't for ADD, and I think you know that.
Of course.
Because these are the most creative, brilliant people around. Yes, do they have negative symptoms? Yes, they do. But I truly believe, since I got in control of mine, that if you do the work, you can get in control. And part of the work, from what you're saying, is find an improv class and get
find
up
an
there.
Improv
and
class. Find, you need to find the door that you can walk through. And the conventional world is not going to give you the door, you see. So if you can be inquisitive enough, and maybe it's not, I may be wrong, but you tell me, that maybe initiation is hard, but we are inquisitive, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so let's build on our strengths. If we're inquisitive, what might it look like to start improv? What would be a way I could start? Do I need one friend to get together with and just try it a few times in a really small environment? What's the door for me to go through? Right? Where could I get started that would
absolutely
my confidence
right,
enough to then go to the class and step by step? Because I have to understand my brain enough to know, and it's sort of like a trust in yourself. Like you, it's that self advocacy involves trusting yourself more.
Right. So, for example, you talk about finding the door, and you have somebody who you do private coaching as well. So you have somebody, let's say you have somebody that comes to you who is not comfortable opening up that door to your improv classes on Wednesday nights or whatever other nights you do them over in Hermosa. So they come to you. What do you do with them? What kind of process do you walk them through to get them to that place where they can open the bigger door?
Just the very beginning, simple exercises, like Jimmy Fallon does this thing on his show. It's like emotional conversation. Right? So you just keep having a conversation and change the emotions and, just simple exercises that really are about yes and. We don't ask questions, but we do just make statements. And we make statements, and we make statements, and we get so we trust ourselves to make fun statements. And it's just fun, just to start out with, could you have fun with it? Well, okay, if we're having fun, that takes us back to childhood. Do you know any more present beings than young kids? Right? So if we can play, we can be in present time, you say. Right?
Right.
So we got to, all of us, sort of have to go back to childhood and remember what present time and the awe of looking at something. Oh, my gosh, I found this thing, and isn't it the best thing ever? And they're just rallying on this one thing that they see, and they're so into it. I mean, that's being present.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I have an exercise I'll do in my class. Your partner's going to speak, and it's the best thing you ever heard. But you never heard anything like that before. Wow. This is amazing that you just said that sentence.
I love that. That's
present
great.
Present time.
So, So let me ask you this. You talked before a little bit about doing an exercise with somebody one-on-one where you engage them in emotion. Okay, so emotion for some of us, okay, not everybody, but for some of us, and especially people on the spectrum, emotion can be very difficult to process, to understand, to feel, because it can be very overwhelming, right? Any kind of emotion, whether it's, you know, especially now, let me just digress for a minute, whether that emotion is happiness or anger or hurt, but there's also another aspect to people with ADHD and spectrum, and that is sensory integration, highly sensitive people. So you have a combination of stuff going on because the highly sensitive person, you know, has a hard time putting on certain kind of clothes, doesn't like certain kind of odors, doesn't like loud sounds, you know, can't chew certain kinds of food. And so that emotion comes over them like a tidal wave. If you've ever gotten stuck in a wave, you know how that feels. Okay, imagine a tidal wave of emotion. So you were talking about doing an exercise one-on-one. Can you walk me through that exercise just so that everybody can hear what it sounds like?
Well, I don't know if I would do that exercise with the type of person who, you know, the way you talked about it. I'm just interjecting something here. I might do
sure.
it differently.
Okay.
If someone was highly, the emotion thing was highly, you know, they were highly sensitive, I might
right.
put them in situations and just, you know, have them explore just one emotion. Like, it's
right.
This is called scenes from a hat. So you'd say the whole, you know, this is where you are, this is the, and I want you to play with the emotion of joy or the emotion of paranoia or the, you know, just different comedic emotions. And this is where you are, except you're very paranoid. And I just want you to play with that.
Okay.
You know, and so we're going to have a conversation, and you're just going to put. Now, if you're more comfortable switching the emotions, then what would happen is you'd say, you know, paranoia, frustration, you know, playfulness. I mean, just different, you know, states and emotions. And you learn to switch those. If that's not your strength, then we would do something else. But that's how you would explore that.
Okay.
What we want
and so,
is for them to feel comfortable speaking, right?
In
to
that
initiate
emotion.
And flow with conversation. So it depends on what your strengths and or weaknesses are. We have players who the emotion thing isn't their big thing. They're more clever, but they don't access
right.
their emotions easily. So it's just
right.
people are made different. Yes.
Right. So you don't need to access your emotion per se to be good at improv. You need to be clever.
You need to be able to be present and to play.
Okay.
Just to be present and be somewhat playful about the conversation. Go ahead.
You just made a really a powerful statement because, you know, one of the things for people with ADHD, people on the spectrum, people with anxiety or depression, whatever, this whole thing with emotion can be very difficult for them, you know. Just being able to access that emotion or being able to understand it. There's a lot of times the inability to really understand what does joy look like or feel like. But what you're saying is they don't really need that to do improv.
It's the willingness to flow. The willingness
wow.
to
okay.
learn to flow. You see, it's about, oh, you said that, I say this. you said that, I say this, except you're doing it consciously. It's not like a normal conversation when you're sitting and talking to someone after work on the couch. It's not like that, you see.
Right.
It's more purposeful and playful. And so it trains
and in the moment
to be more purposeful and playful and present, you see.
Right.
That's what it
right.
trains. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Which a lot of us have a hard time. I can tell you that a lot of people with ADHD, when I tell them about being in the moment, a lot of them have a hard time accessing that, like just pulling on that, because they have a lot of thought. Remember you talked before about all these thoughts. We are deluged sometimes by thought, and many times they're not pleasant. They can be very negative. And so it's one of the things that mindfulness has done for me, it enables me to stay in the moment, and when a thought comes up that's a negative thought, I say, that's a fascinating thought, but I'm not engaging in that thought right now, because that'll take me down a rabbit hole, because that's what we do best. So that's interesting.
By the way, I've had the same experience with mindfulness, ability to monitor my thoughts that way, yes.
Which is great, isn't it?
It is. It's fantastic.
It's yes.
Yeah.
So does improv kind of help you with those thoughts at the same time?
Absolutely. It's the same place. It exists in the same world as mindfulness. You see?
So amazing.
It is, because it trains the neuroplasticity. And you are operating as a player. You operate as a holistic being. It's not the way you operate in school, and it's not the way you operate in society when you're having a conversation, for most
right.
people. You are operating from a place of centeredness, more
yes.
wholeness. You're
yes.
listening to your heart. Soul, you're listening to the conversation, you're present, and you're interacting. And this is mindfulness, really.
Right. It's mindfulness
and
with words.
I personally go into a space where my brain waves go down. I'm not in the normal conversation brain waves, but my brain waves actually, when I'm doing improv, it's congruent with the beginning of my meditation, maybe not my deep meditation, but it's congruent. It's the same feeling as I get at the beginning of my meditation.
Wow, that's so cool! It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
So it's just so incredible. So would you say that improv can help young people focus and develop confidence in themselves? I mean, is that basically what you're saying? That with this being in the moment, neuroplasticity creating, that you're also giving them a level of confidence that they didn't have before.
Absolutely. And remember that, you know, because you are daring to get out of your comfort zone, the opportunity is there for you to have more, shall we say, in the inner game of confidence, right?
Right.
There's so much potential for that inner game to mature into a self-support, self-advocacy system, because you see it happening, right? And the reason being, there's this cycle where you see it happen. Your brain gets trained a little bit more and a little bit more. And if you will allow yourself then to say, hey, let me pat myself on the back, I just did that, we now have this, right, this kind of self-feedback system where it's like, I did that. And I've had so many students who even, maybe they didn't stay with it for years and years, but so many people who have said to me, I got up in front of the room at my work, and I was so much better. It's
wow.
so much easier for me to talk to people. I can't believe how I can just instantaneously come up with something to say when I need to. Just over and over again. Yeah.
And the interesting thing was that the first night that Mike came to your class, and as you heard me say in my introduction, it took me 5 years to get him there. He got in the car that night and he said, you know what? Gee, I really hate to say this, but you were right. This is something that's really going to help me. And
after
you know what?
This was after his first class, right?
That was after his first class.
Yeah.
So he saw it right away. Mike's very bright. He sees things very, very quickly. And I wasn't looking for him to get in the car and say that, but you know, he said, I really see that this is going to be able to help me a lot, you know, in life. So he's going to absolutely continue when he goes up. Yeah, when he goes up to San Francisco, he's absolutely going to continue. And I'm excited because I also think he's going to make some really good friends getting into a nice group. I think it'll be great for him. But I'm saying that because when your kids push back, whoever's listening to this, that they don't want to go, figure out a way to drag them kicking and screaming, because I'm telling you, they're going to have a great time. They really are. And I know for the people who are listening in the South Bay, they absolutely can come to your South. It's a South Bay adult class that Michael's doing right now at Redondo Union, and that's on Wednesday nights from 6:45 to 9:30. But you have an improv class. When is your improv class that you teach outside of the adult school?
Tuesday nights.
Okay. And that's, where is that held?
In Redondo Beach.
At the same school, at the school?
No. Well, I have, in Hermosa Beach, I rent a classroom.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I have it in Redondo, and sometimes I rent a classroom in Hermosa. You know where we went for the theater?
Yes.
Yes, I rent classrooms in that building. So it's 710
Pier Avenue. It's right off Pier Avenue.
Yeah.
It's right off Pier Avenue and PCH, Pacific Coast Highway. And they can also...
Right. And you can...
How can they find you? Just tell them how they can find you. What is your website?
Jumpstartimprov.com. Jumpstartimprov.com is a website with my information on it. And
okay.
You know, if you contact me there, I'll find the right place for you, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, which is really, it's really important. And it's jumpstartimprov.com. And
yeah, jumpstart
you also do private. Private coaching, which is great.
Yeah, coaching. That's right. Yeah.
Which is great.
I do.
And because I think sometimes you do need to have a couple of, you know, maybe private classes before you enter into the bigger world of improv.
Yeah.
So
if you're shy, yeah, a little bit shy or a little bit reserved, yes, it's a good idea.
So have you ever had people with autism in your classes?
I don't know if I've had autistic. Definitely a lot of ADHD, and if autistic, pretty low on the spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Yeah.
So nobody that was very high on the spectrum.
They don't tend to be gregarious. And you know what I mean? So I think the private or semi-private kind of atmosphere could bring them out enough to see where they would fit in best, you know.
Yeah.
I think
you know what I noticed about...
Step by step, you have to...
Yeah, and I agree with you, but also I have to tell you that the majority of people that I have worked with and met in my life on the spectrum are hilarious.
They are
so funny, but you have to.
We just got to get them through that initial resistance.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to tell a story that I heard, it was probably about 3 years ago, relating to improv, which I think people would would enjoy. So John Belushi had a partner on the Blues Brothers, and what was his name? Because, you know, I have ADD, so I forgot his name. Do you remember who that was? The Blues Brothers?
Oh, I can see his
face. Maybe
my
husband remembers. Anyway,
yeah.
I saw him on TV one night, and he was talking about when he was in high school, his parents were very worried about him because he was all over the place, he couldn't get focused, and he also was not interacting with people. And his parents
really?
Discovered, yeah, his parents discovered in his town, I think it was somewhere in Ohio, that, if I've got this right, that they found an improv class. And he basically, he was talking to I think it might be Charlie Rose who was interviewing him, and he said
okay.
It absolutely changed his life. Changed his life in so many ways.
Wow.
Dan Aykroyd, that was his name.
Dan
everybody
Aykroyd,
was listening.
That's what, yes. I
yes.
knew that's
Dan Aykroyd, my husband just brought it over to me. He's the best. But it changed his life. He got into the Not for Primetime plays. Was it in Chicago that they all started? That when we
yes.
Second City. That's right.
Yeah,
Second
he
City. He got into Second
He
yeah.
got into Second City with John Belushi in Chicago. That's
right.
Yeah.
John Belushi
That's
and the rest
yeah.
of them who ended up on Saturday Night Live. But it's that it was then that I heard that, and it was probably, you know, this whole process started 5 years ago for me with Mike. But 3 years ago when I heard Dan Aykroyd talking about this, I was like, see, this is just incredible. And he said it just completely changed his life, just being able to talk to people, engage with people, be funny, feel comfortable doing that, because he was always very funny, but he was a private, funny kind of person.
Yeah.
So
right at home, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And so you mm-hmm. look at people like him. I don't think – I don't know much about John Belushi. I've never, of course, had – he's dead, poor guy, but, you know, I'm sure that he had his own demons. And I'm sure improv was a way for him to step outside himself as well.
Absolutely.
So I just can't, yeah, I can't say it enough for people who are listening how if you're struggling with your children, your adolescents, as adults, that you don't feel like you can push your comfort zone, step outside of it, or you know, get up in front of a classroom and talk to people or in front of a business meeting, or you don't feel like you can just interact with people, there's a way out. This is a really good way to start doing this kind of work.
It is. And so, it's, you know, now we're in a classroom where you're encouraged, and I have a lot of people who come in where English is not their first language. That's a big
wow.
one.
Wow.
Right. So that's a very interesting, you know, they have to translate in their heads almost sometimes, and it's tough for them. But what they do is they come because they want to communicate better in our American culture.
Wow.
So, but this is a place where you can, you know, just, It's a laboratory. Try to think of it that way. It's a laboratory for your neuroplasticity. You know what I mean? Where you can, like, you're encouraged to, like, oh, just go ahead and blabble there a little bit. Blabble, blabble. And see how, that's how you begin. Just a little bit of babble,
yeah.
babble, blabble, blabble, you know, and see what happens.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And you walk
it's
out
taking...
after that and you say, right, and you do things even in the first class you can't believe you did. Where did that come
right.
from? Right. You know?
It's taking that initial step of, you know, it's like anything else, of taking that initial step of doing something that you have never done before. So, you
that's
know,
exactly
take
right.
you know, you take karate, for instance. You know, that's something else that I think is really good for little boys with ADHD that can really help harness some of that energy and, you know, put them, that centers you as well. So it's like that. You're going to karate for the first time and you're nervous, you know, and you don't know what to expect.
That's right. That's That's right. You know, I have a lot of adults who are very high achievers who come to the class.
Really?
I have some of those. Sure, they're high achievers. They've accomplished
wow.
in their own field or whatever. Guess what? Maybe they're engineers. I need to communicate better. Man, they are just fabulous at work. They get into the improv space, and they have to go back to being a beginner. Ouch.
That's amazing.
You know, right? 'Cause you,
how do they handle that?
Some of them do it very well, and some of them not so well, because it takes humility and this ability to support. You know, I'm talking about people who are older, who you have to go back
right.
and be a little bit humble and stumble a little bit, because it's a new way of interacting. It's, you know, it's out of your comfort zone a little, you know, and in some ways it's a little harder when you're older like that. But there's plenty of people who come in and they're willing to be beginners again in something, and
wow.
they do just fine.
Wow. Tell me something. You know how, like, I run adult support groups for ADHD, okay? So I'm the facilitator of that group. It's not improv, of course, but it's a group where we talk about a lot of different things, and we do a lot of mindfulness and meditation. And one of the things that I do in that group is I facilitate a lot of acceptance and just love in that group, because there's a lot of people that are coming in there experiencing shame. Shame is a big thing
yes.
in our population,
it's very
right?
Big. It's
yeah.
very big, yes.
So how do you contain your group of, let's say, 10 people? Somebody comes in and they're not savvy at all and they're a little bit awkward. What do you say, how do you handle that with the group?
Well, I seem to attract people who understand that and see that and just want to include, you know.
Right.
So, for example, there'll be some banter, you know, talking to the person, trying to make them feel at ease, you know, just inclusion, right? And then it's up to the person who's new to decide if they want to be a part of that invitation of inclusion,
hmm.
right? So that's what I do, yeah. And
what
I'm,
happens,
you know, go ahead.
What happens in that instance, in that moment, if the person says, no, I think I just want to sit down, I'm not feeling real good about this at this moment. What happens then? Do you just allow them to sit down and watch? Is that okay?
Okay, yes. Especially if I understand that they need the flowing.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. If they really need the flowing. I've had teachers where they wouldn't let you do that, but I feel like people kind of know where they're at and you need to honor that.
Right. And then eventually do you notice that they will come up, but it's a slow process after coming, let's say, a couple of weeks and just sitting and watching?
It depends on the person, but yes.
Okay.
People, yeah, it's, there is a leap of faith that all people have to make to do improv.
Right.
So if they're willing to make that leap of faith, it says, I believe in myself no matter what, you know, and I'm willing to work through the fact that, you know, I don't want shame ruling my life forever. There comes a point we gotta get rid of that shame, because it's
right.
pretty powerful. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, it can be so painful for people.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
all from not from the present as much as from the past. I mean, the past comes
Absolutely.
Into the present all day long, but just being able to feel that you know, acceptance of, I'm going to sit down for a little while and then I'm going to see if I can stand up and do this. Because I want people that are listening to understand that for the most part, and understand my listening audience is all over the world. I have people who listen, you know, in England and other places as well. And I know that most cities in the United States have improv, and I just want parents or people that are going to go to understand that you can kind of move your way into it. It doesn't have to be that you jump in right away with 2 feet if that's not where you are.
Yeah, I'd like to just tell a little bit of my own story.
How
I broke my own shame and perfectionistic complex that you're
great.
Talking about. Yeah, a few years back, you know, quite a while back, actually. But I still remember it so vividly. I was taking a class because, I was teaching and directing, but I also was trying to up my skills, right? So I was doing all these things. And I'm at a class, and I had something, you know, that was like, oops, blooper. And right after that, we took a break. And I laid down on the stage and started laughing and kind of like, you know how you kind of kick as a little kid and just laugh and laugh. I was laughing at myself.
Wow.
And it was such a breakthrough because I had, you know, I realized the folly of trying to be so good. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yes.
And the gales of laughter and the understanding that it just isn't that important, you know.
Right.
But what is important, and this is why I admire stand-up so much, because they have this sort of self-deprecation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's very wise to be able to say, I can't do it. I didn't do it. Let me laugh at myself when I didn't do it. Let me laugh at myself when I did not do X, Y, or Z.
Right. Right. It's a powerful thing to do, to be able to laugh at yourself. I'm one of those people. I wasn't years ago, but I am now. And I try to get kids, adolescents, everybody to laugh at themselves. But you know what, Julie? It can be so difficult for people that are in pain. It's painful for them. And I'm sad for them because laughter is the best medicine in the world.
I still say studying stand-ups might help them. I mean, not all of them are people that, you know, I mean, some of them are kind of raunchy and stuff like that. But there, if you see the stand-up pattern and how they sort of make fun of themselves and then laugh,
yes,
it's so healthy that maybe watching that could be good. I don't know.
Yes.
It's just a thought.
That's a good point. That's a
yeah.
really, really good point. And, you know, the other
mm-hmm.
thing about stand-up, a lot of stand-up comedians, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but, for example, the guy who did Curb Your Enthusiasm, who wrote for Saturday Night Live and wrote Seinfeld. I'm so bad with names.
No,
from what I understand,
again, but I'm not gonna...
Yes. We'll think of it. But anyway, when we first moved out here to California, which was 14 years ago, we met a woman comedian. I don't remember her name. And she was talking about this particular comedian and said, he's very funny, he's very engaging, and his name is Larry David, thank you, my husband, he's very engaging, he's very funny, but in his own world, he can be very antisocial, very dark. And it's interesting because I've heard this a lot about stand-up comedians. I mean, some of them I'm sure suffer with depression, and it's the laughter that kind of covers up some of that stuff that they're feeling, which is a great thing. It's not a bad thing, but I have heard that underneath the clown, as the saying goes, is a lot of pain.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the pain, there is even in improv, you know, what we call the shadow. We have sort of our shadow thoughts. And in our everyday conversations, we don't bring them up. But you might bring it up in improv. Just like a little bit of a shadowy kind of, you know, swarmy kind of thought process. And boy, is that cathartic to just talk about it.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
because
I agree.
Keeping all this stuff, all the pain and all the shadow and all the swarmy kind of ooh, emotions under wraps is what keeps them alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
but getting at that pain, you know, is the most important thing in what I see as getting better when you go to the world of therapy. Right? I mean, my favorite book in the world is The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity to see it or read it. If you do, it will change. It's amazing how it changed my life. You will love it
I've heard about that book. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible book. And one of the chapters in the book, chapter 11, since I have the book memorized, is Pain, the Price of Freedom. And you got to let go. You got to deal with the pain. You got to run it through your heart. You got to get rid of it because we live with that deep-seated pain in our heart all the time, and so much of it comes from the childhood years of things happening that, you know, we just were never able to release. So
right.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who are very funny out there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so what you talk about doing that up on stage – you know, in improv, something comes up and you say it and you get it out in that venue can be very helpful.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. It's like you can take the very thing that you thought was absolutely horrible, and if you just kind of look at it from a different point of view, it's almost like it's the same thing, but you just sort of move your point of view way over to, you know, 180 degrees and look at it like this. It's kind of like, you know, here's two people who, obviously there was a big misunderstanding. What's the craziness of that? The craziness
right.
of this point of view, the craziness, you know, and it, you can escalate how crazy these two points of view are. And everybody holding on to their, you know, stupid ideas. And maybe it's not what we, you know, it's like retelling the story a different way, you know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Like, I was watching you Friday night, that last skit where I yelled out London, where you were doing the Big Ben thing. And that you and this guy were in this skit together, and the things you were saying to each other, I know you were looking off in the corner at two different people for things to say, which was very funny, and I really enjoyed it. But I think about there was a misunderstanding in that skit that was funny, but in real life can really cause a lot of difficulties for people because of that misunderstanding. And
that's right.
So there you go. There's another way that improv can help people.
That's right. That's right. Because the misunderstandings of life is where the comedy is. The twists and turns, the thinking outside the box, there's that ADHD, that thinking outside the box, what's not in the refrigerator, what's not common in this situation, and putting that in the scene and playing with it is so much fun. And right? So you're on a first date, or third date or whatever, there's a lot of misunderstandings, right? Because we don't really know each other, right? And it's so much fun to play. It's like, you know, that social awkwardness of life is hilarious.
It truly is. If we could all laugh about it, it would make things so much easier for all of us. And so tell me something about your childhood. You said your dad is ADHD.
Oh, yeah, my father, ADHD.
What was that like for you growing up with a father with ADHD? Was it fun?
For a highly sensitive, I'm in the box of the highly sensitive person, HSP,
okay,
with ADD. It was excruciatingly painful, okay? Excruciatingly painful because
how was it?
That's how you're feeling, Dad. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Right?
Yes, I know it.
So, you know, I said I started doing comedy improv 12 years ago. I had done it before then, but this is the 12 years in a row that I did it. And,
okay,
you know, when I first started, people said, why did you come to this class? Two reasons. It's better than therapy, A, and B, I want to be a public speaker. That was how I started. You know, I thought, why waste my time in therapy when I can do this?
Right, exactly. I agree. Yeah. No, I do. I really do. I think it's just, it's so cathartic. It's a great way to get the things out. So your childhood in school, how was school for you? Was it difficult because of the creative? Because you're highly creative.
Right. So I was good at hyper-focusing.
Okay.
So my, whatever my ADD is, I can hyper-focus.
Okay.
So I could be linear enough to get by in school, but it was confining for me. Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Confining and very mundane sometimes and very boring at other times.
Yeah.
We have to figure out a way in this country to teach to all different kind of learners, and we're not doing that yet.
Boy, I couldn't agree more. That is
definitely
what we need. Yes.
Yeah.
And that would,
in fact,
would really benefit us.
Oh, it would. And in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I had Dr. John Rady on the show. He is the co-author of Driven to Distraction. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. It's a huge book. And Dr. Hallowell was a co-author as well. And Dr. Rady just wrote a book called Spark. Now, I have to tell you something. He probably should have put a chapter on improv in his book, because every chapter, it's depression and anxiety and ADHD and all different things, talking about how exercise turns on the brain. It's very interesting because I've read the book. I got it and I read it, and it's very powerful. It's very dead on, very interesting, and how what he's really working towards, and I commend him for this, and I told him I would do anything I could to help him, is he's basically talking to schools around the country, trying to figure out how to get kids that can't sit still, instead of getting them in trouble, to give them a treadmill or a bicycle or something for 30 minutes that's going to
recommend a rebounder. They should just have rebounders in the back of the room. Go back there and rebound and listen.
Okay, what's a rebound?
A little trampoline. A little mini trampoline. Yeah.
Yes.
Those are great.
Yeah. That's a great idea. So what I'm thinking, talking to you, though, is doing improv classes in school for kids would be awesome. I mean, talking about creating neuroplasticity. You're talking about turning the brain on. You're talking about giving them ways to step outside themselves when they're feeling frustrated. And instead of, you know, and look, I'm a therapist, but I'm also a coach. Instead of sending them down to the counselor, putting them in an improv class. And let's act out what just happened. I mean, there's so many different ways to do these things to help kids.
I think it would be awesome. And
we kind of
haven't progressed. You know, we've stayed sort of in the same structure for so long. I mean, there are some innovative new schools, but in general, the public school system is very much the way it was, what, 30 years ago or forever,
yes.
Right?
Oh, forever. More than 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's back to the days of the Puritans when they first came over.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
So we,
no, it's rows of chairs. It's crazy. There's no kinesthetic stuff. Tactile learning is limited. I mean, we need that. You talk about turning our brains on, just sitting there and listening to somebody talk all day long. You lost me.
It's only appropriate for a certain demographic, let's face it.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. And in every classroom across this country, you have linear thinkers, you have auditory learners, you have people that learn through reading, you have people that are dyslexic, kids that are dyslexic, you have kids who are ADHD, you have kids on the spectrum, in every classroom across this country, and we're only teaching one way. It's hard. It's very hard for the kids. So it's a lot of work to be done. But unfortunately, you and I can't change the world. I wish we could, but we can't.
That would be nice if we could.
I know.
Without our paintbrush. Yes.
But I tell you, I am indebted to you forever because my son is destined to stay in improv. So you are his first experience. Thank you so much for that.
Well, you are welcome. You are welcome. And I would, you know, he's brilliant.
Thank you. He's such a great person, Michael. He is an amazing human being. He really is. He just struggles in certain areas that a lot of people struggle in. And that's why I thought
that's
it was
right.
So powerful for him to be with you in that class and to learn that, you know what, it's not important to be perfect. It's really not. That you, as when you said that to him the other night about Mike, sometimes you're going to hit the mark, you're going to be funny, and other times you're not. And it's that up and down piece that's going to really create that neuroplasticity for you. And he heard that because it's not always important to hit the mark and to be funny. It's the whole process that helps.
It's true. I mean, improv has totally changed my life by helping train my neuroplasticity to stay present, to really allow me to fail, because sometimes it doesn't work, you know? And, you know, so I just teach what I've learned.
Yeah. It's so great, and you're helping so many people, and I want to thank you for that. And I want everybody to know who's in the South Bay that, Julie, what is your last name?
Julie Martin.
Okay, and I did have it on the show, but I wanted you to tell everybody your last name. And they can get in touch with you through your website, which you talked about before. Can you say it again?
Yeah, jumpstartimprov.com.
Great. Okay. Because Julie does private coaching as well, which I think is really important for a lot of people, and kind of jumpstart them into this whole process. And for those of you who don't live in our area, but you're around the country, just start Googling improv. And Julie, would you suggest that they interview, if it's for their children, that they interview the teacher? And is there something they should be looking for in the teacher when they interview them?
I would ask the teacher, you know, about their willingness to create a safety, a safe zone for their, once again, the door opening in maybe a slow way so that their child can catch on, you know, because there might be some nurturing that needs to happen along the way. Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely.
Find out the temperature of that teacher, you know, and see if they're on that page. And you're looking for more of a community class, you know, not a highly competitive one. Find out about that. Yeah.
Right. And also, would you say that if the person who's teaching the class, the amount of time they've had in improv is important, the understanding of the people that are coming to the group, their understanding of, let's say, a parent calls up and says, my son has ADHD. Is that important as well?
You mean the amount of time the person has spent and, like, what their history is, the teacher?
Yeah, kind of how long they've taught it, and also do they have an understanding of ADHD or the lower end of the spectrum?
Right. So I would ask about those things, like, you know, what is your population of your class like? And then what is your experience with ADHD kids? I know, you know, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi were very ADHD, so I'm thinking,
no kidding.
You know, my son or daughter is probably a good prospect for this, but I want to know, you know, everybody has to start somewhere, so where are you on that? You know, that's a good way
right.
to... right?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if they say back to you, oh, I don't really understand that, then I think you need to find somebody else.
I think so, too, yeah.
I mean, I would find that hard to believe that somebody teaching improv had absolutely no experience with ADHD at all.
Well, I've had plenty of ADHD people in my classes.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
I have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're
a lot
of fun. Yeah. They really are. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They're very gregarious and very fun.
But see, that's important because people around the country, when they're looking for this, I want them to know that it's important. It's just like if you're going to get a doctor, like you just interview people and you find out, because you don't want this experience for their child or adolescent to be a negative experience. You really want it to be positive.
And that's what you tell them that you're looking for, just a positive experience. I know that improv is excellent communication training, but I don't want them to be turned off by this. I want them to be turned on. Are you going to be that person that's going to, right?
Right. So that's really helpful. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you so much for being on the show today. I was so excited about having you on because I have just been a big fan of improv for years. And, again, thank you for introducing my son in such a positive way that he's leaving in a couple of weeks, moving back up to San Francisco, and one of the first things he's going to do is find a group up there. So, and if you have any people that you know up there that you can let us know about, please do so, because it'd be great for him to continue.
Well, it's been my pleasure to meet him. I mean,
thank you.
You know, he's just been a wonderful addition to my class.
Thank you.
And I have had a blast talking to you today.
I have too. This is really fun.
It's a great experience to share just the richness of the improv experience over this time, you know, because it's so rich and it's so beneficial for people. And to be able to share it is a joy for me, just a joy.
Oh, I'm so glad. And you were great. Thank you so much for being on, because as I'm going to say again, this has really been something that I am just so passionate about. I really am. And I am certainly going to be referring people your way. Believe me, you'll get a lot of people from me.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
Thanks again. And I know that we're going to be talking soon, and I just appreciate everything that you do.
Thank you. And remember, improv your life.
It's my life. You have a great rest of the Sunday, Julie. Have a great day.
Thank you, Justine.
All right. You take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. I think all of you will agree after really listening to the show that improv can be something that can help all of us. Children, adolescents, adults can help us in so many different ways in our life, especially in the area of communication and just being able to relate to others. So we will be back soon. I want everybody to remember to stay in the moment. Have a great Sunday, and please take care of yourself. Bye.